Hey everybody, what is going on? I hope everyone is doing well, had a nice Memorial Day weekend, and welcome back yet again to a brand new episode of Sweeten Up Podcast, season number 3, episode number 94. I am your host, Jeff Spencer, and thank you so much for taking some time to join me today. I greatly appreciate it, whether you have for multiple seasons, an entire season, or you are today for the first time. Thank you so much for joining us. However, if you are just joining us for the first time, take a look back at our library of 93 episodes anytime you want, anywhere you listen to your podcasts. As always, if you like what you hear on the podcast today and you want to hear more, please be sure to tell all your friends and subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcasts so that you never miss a future episode. The podcast is available on all major podcast platforms, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for Sweeten Up Podcast. With that being said, my guest on the podcast today is the great and powerful Zamir Gada. Zamir Gada is a producer, TV personality, independent filmmaker, and peacemaker. He is best known as the traveling companion to the late American chef Anthony Bourdain and his Travel Channel TV show, Anthony Bourdain, No Reservations, when they traveled to Uzbekistan, Russia, and Romania, and later in the U.S. Rust Belt, Ukraine, and Kansas City. Gada also accompanied Bourdain in Batumi during Bourdain's subsequent series, Parts Unknown, on CNN. Having the opportunity to chat with one of Anthony Bourdain's closest friends and a legend in his own right was a total honor. We had an incredible discussion about the life and legacy of Anthony, as well as some projects Zamir is working on to continue to honor his life and legacy. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, my friend and one of the most interesting guys around, Mr. Zamir Gada. Joining me on the podcast today via Zoom video conferencing, it is the absolute honor of a lifetime to have this international man of mystery on the show today. He was the former travel companion to the late American chef and icon Anthony Bourdain for both Travel Channel and CNN, as well as a TV personality, independent filmmaker, and peacemaker. The great and powerful Zamir Gada joins the program. And Zamir, thank you so much for giving me some of your free time. I really appreciate it. Big fan of your work. And how are you? What's going on, buddy?
Well, listen, I'm good. It just, life is good regardless of the madhouse which is happening around the world. And Connecticut is probably more of a little niche of peace and quiet. That's why for the moment I'm here with my niece's family. She's married to an American guy, and you know, we're all excited getting ready for the Memorial Day, which has different meaning, of course, for all of us. But at this, you know, important time, we all remember the people who perished for the sake of freedom and democracy. That's how I look at it.
That's awesome. Very well said. I could not agree more. And what are your plans for the weekend? You got any plans? You eat some good food, something like that?
Well, food is definitely part of my life. Since I met Tony, I wasn't really a foodie, but he transformed me, as probably you and many of the people who started following him, into the very simple thing. Believe me or not, this is like quintessential Bourdainian lifestyle. He would say, Zamir, once we open a bottle, doesn't matter what, like in Mexico, we would open a bottle of tequila, in Russia, a bottle of vodka, in US, probably a bottle of bourbon. It's just a chance to start a conversation with the people you never met before, right?
Right.
So unfortunately, since you cannot see me on that podcast, I will have to explain that the t-shirt I'm wearing, which says Gotta Travel, it's not about my ego as last name Gata. It's just more about the way I started to understand life in a different way. The more we could travel, even just outside of our neighborhood, meet a new person in a bar or elsewhere, or ideally go beyond the borders just to open new culture, new mindset, new way, a way of life, will better help us to understand that we are basically all the same. We eat similar food, we eat, drink similar booze. It's just different recipes, right? Depending on your history, culture, and ethnicity. So from this standpoint, Anthony showed me the way to unite people around this small table, no matter how many people could be accommodated, 2, 4, 24, it doesn't really matter. Just the way to open your heart, to talk face to face, and to try to learn something.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, you said it so great. And I can't wait to dive into more about, you know, spending time with Anthony, what he meant to you, what it was like doing the, the shows that you guys did together and everything like that. And I absolutely love that that phrase, got to travel. I love it. I love how you incorporated your last name into that, that saying, on your shirt. That's so cool. And I've been seeing that and I'm like, that's great. He's a genius.
good.
Yeah.
Good.
But, how have you been? I saw you were just in Buffalo, New York. How was that? I know you have close connections and love for Buffalo. They just recently went through a very tragic situation. So I'm sure people really enjoyed having you by. And how was your time over there?
Cap, honestly, once again, I have to be honest with you as part of my, life perception. Like, I'm 65. It's too late to bullshit or to be insincere. So I'm trying to be a straightforward guy as much as I can. Trying to avoid politics for obvious reasons with the war happening in the wonderland of Russia. I'm trying to be more on the kind of outside of it for obvious reasons, since my kids are still there and I don't want them to be hostages of someone who is claiming he's the czar of the whole world, which is another sickness we'll touch diplomatically later. But Buffalo became a real part of my presence in the US, more like my second home, for one simple reason. Just giving you a little bit of a background of the no reservations after several successful episodes in my backyard in the former Soviet Union countries, which Tony wanted to explore once again, thanks to his curiosity, the way he was always hungry for more, not just recipes of food only, but more about intellectual hunger of trying to figure out how and why people are different in their lifestyle, but what is the unification symbol for all of us to try and find compromises and to start up a conversation. For me, a conversation is the way for a dialogue. So just to give you a little bit of a background, in freezing cold of January in 2009, Tony invited me to be part of his No Reservation show in Rust Belt episode, which was composed of three visits, basically 2 days each. We started in Detroit, then Buffalo and Baltimore. He actually wanted to show me, as ex-commie, the guy who was born in the prime of stagnation in the former communist country of USSR, that capitalism could also suck. For me at that time in my life, I thought, well, capitalism is more like of an ideal system after I was fed up with the expectation of communism, right? Born as a young kid who would be promised over the TV and radio, like after 1980s, the USSR will live in the communism. Do you know what communism means, by the way? What are the main goals of communism?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Good.
Definitely.
So just to remind your audience that everyone works and everyone gets the fruits of the communal distribution kind of evenly. No matter how good you are or whether you are better or worse, everyone is getting the equal amount of something, right? The material values, right?
Yep.
Which was probably a good dream, the way I started to understand when I was like a teenager and in my 20s, but which was not meant to be anytime in fruition, right? Some people, like to live the whole life in the dream world, right? That was what communism was all about, right? I'm not super critical about it. It definitely had certain values and benefits for everyone, like, free medical system, free education, etc. But at the end of the game, you cannot succeed with the competitive nations, because when everyone gets the same amount of joint distribution, it doesn't sound right, trust me. Just to give you an example, a friend of mine who was probably 16, her early 60s, very recently, she was working as a waitress just to make some more money to whatever her family income needed. And she told me one simple thing, Zamir, they impose a new system, like no matter how much you personally get as a tip at the end of the day, they want to put it in the pot and distribute evenly with everyone. like young kids who just started the job, or me who has been around the block for quite some time. And I said, Mary, so what's bad about it? You know what? I believe that if I get something based on my talent, efforts, and hard work, I should keep it, not just keep it in the joint pot. And you know what? That's what I started to realize more and more when I was just getting into the 20s and was on my first foreign mission as an intern in Iraq since 1980 to 1982. And I started to realize something. Well, back home in Moscow with empty shelves, with empty stores of everything, not enough food for everyone, not enough clothes, not enough utilities. They were telling us one simple thing. Okay, we understand we have shortages, but at least we're the most powerful military nation in the world to upkeep peace. And with my name as Yazamir, which was literally translated as a slogan, I am a peacemaker, I thought, okay, it does make some sense, right? But being sent to the Kurdistan, the northern part of Iraq, as an intern to translate for Arab and Russian and East European engineers to be part of that jointly constructed hydropower station, I started to see that in the middle of nowhere, in the developing country, third world country, like in the mountaineers kind of a little store, there was abundance of food from all over the world. And I started thinking, why not back home in the country which claims it's one of the superpowers, right? So something was not cooking right. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%.
So that's when I started questioning, well, maybe these ideas of communism are great, but they're like the dreams of people who can never get into this. So I hope you won't be surprised that in at the end of 80s, when Gorbachev took over and started to bring reforms, and basically in 1991, when the whole Soviet Union collapsed, I was 36, when they said kind of openly, finally, okay, guys, talking to the Soviet people, we kind of fucked up, we screwed up, so you need to start your life from a scratch. We failed to deliver what we promised. Now you're in a new wild capitalism. Welcome.
Wow.
So now you know better why I think Tony got connected to me as someone who was an alien, someone who was totally different from day one, meaning compared to his lifestyle, born in a pretty bourgeois family, with parents who could afford to bring him to Paris to visit the family, you know, when he was a teenager, to treat him to oysters when he was 14, and to, you know, young Zamir, who was kind of counting between one sort of cheese or one sort of sausage, if he was lucky to get half a pound of it because they couldn't give more to one person, so that there should be enough to the people who were lining up for it since early morning.
Right.
So I was like someone who really couldn't ever figure out why I had to live through that kind of lifestyle and why I wanted to achieve something in the wild capitalism, which was basically all up and running in 2001 when we met in Moscow. And actually, it was St. Petersburg the first time.
Yeah, no, I remember when he first introduced you into the show for the first time. And there was, you know, the segment about, you know, the international man of mystery and, you know, how you were just such a, you know, such a business guy, such a really awesome, interesting dude. And, you know, on that note, sort of, if you can, talk to me about, you know, where you grew up, where you're from, and what was life like leading up to meeting Anthony, and how
Perfect.
Did you meet Anthony?
Perfect. So a little bit of a background, not to keep you to the point of sobbing and crying about the poor Zamir, who was born in the middle of stagnating communism with lack of food, with lack of everything, who was dreaming to find a piece of chewing gum in the pavement of Moscow when I was like a young kid and was very jealous of seeing rare foreigners coming, primarily tourists, in downtown Moscow, where I was trying to like figure out what was, you know, my homeland all about. And they were so proudly chewing the chewing gum, right? And it was like a manifestation of freedom, which I didn't have, because as you probably understand, in the Soviet Union, you have to start to believe early age. Like you used to be a young pioneer with a red scarf, kind of trying to make you feel you belong to a big communist society. And then you switch to Komsomol at about age 13 through 18 to become more of a younger, support of communist ideas, and at the end of your day, as the prime of your career, you would be expected to be a member of Communist Party just to get a real social lift promotion in your career. If you're not a member, you won't make it. So the good news for Zamir was that things started to change probably in mid-80s when I was about 24 or something, right after my trip to internship in Iraq. When I mentioned, I started questioning all the dogmas that Soviet Union is the most committed country to its people because it really meant well to give people free health, free education, which was great. But otherwise, there was not much to be expected, right? If you're not a member of the Communist Party, you could hardly make your career. So right. From this standpoint, I realized that my family, which was very rank and file, my father has been working at the TV producing plant for many years. And without being a member of Communist Party, which he refused for personal reasons, he would hardly get to the top of the, say, social structure. Mom was a teacher of German, so thanks to her efforts since early in my childhood, she started bringing me into the different culture thanks to the foreign languages. So she taught me a little bit of German, more of English, because it was much more in kind of popular, common thanks to the rock band, which were taboo in the Soviet Union, like Beatles was a taboo, or Rolling Stones were a taboo when I was like growing up, like 12, 13. 14 years old, but you know, in every country, there is a black market. So people who would travel, diplomats or their families, they would smuggle some of the books which were tabooed, like, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, right, and the films and the rock music star. So thanks to the black market and my older brother, Misha, who was 9 years older, I was exposed to some of the foreign language, literature, music. And that's the symbol of freedom, as I mentioned, as a young kid of chewing gum, made my first entrepreneurial act. I was probably 8 years old when I told my two same age friends, hey guys, let's try to produce our own chewing gum. And I said, what do you mean? So we found a piece of old tar, you know, that kind of a tire of a car,
yeah,
and cut a piece of it, put it in a kind of little bit of a pot to put on the fire. And once it melted, I thought that would be good enough to be put in the sticks. I saw that the sticks and the Wrigley's, someone gave it to my friend who was, you know, visiting a recently East European country of Hungary. So I thought, okay, so let's cut it and then we'll probably try to chew it. So it should be similar, though black. So I was the first to take that experiment seriously, put it in my mouth and could hardly get my jaws open because, as you know, they got stuck into that piece of shit, basically, of you know, liquid tar. So they brought my mom, who was shocked as everybody else. And after the tar kind of got more kind of sort of, harder and not hot enough, they managed to open my jaws. So if you remember that horror film, The Jaws, yeah. So I was probably the first prototype of that one.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Anthony would laugh at our first meeting about my experience with capitalistic world, how to become a free person thanks to a piece of chewing gum, which was not available in the Soviet stores. Same as jazz music, because as you know, the communists didn't want people to get that exposure to the music of the free people, like of the blues or rock and roll. They all considered that the Western rottening influence of the you know, US and other countries on the immature young communists, like young Soviets, the way I was presented in those years. So right. That was a very interesting exposure.
Yeah, no, that is very interesting. Very interesting. And you know, so how did you meet Anthony? So
another like finger of fate, believe me or not, I started to become a fatalist the more I'm thinking about that whole life transitions. And by the way, before I forget, I'm in the middle of my memoir books about the way Tony, you know, made an impact on my life and how I started to be presented as an underdog, as a man of mystery in the shows. And he urged me to write this book, which took me probably longer than he expected. So now I have to complete it without his introduction. But I'm sure you will be probably interested to read more about this kind of fun stories. Not only fun stories. So that keeps me going.
I definitely want to ask you about that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So anyway, I was a fixer of You know what the word fixa means?
Yes, definitely.
How would you describe it to your audience in the broader sense?
Someone who sets someone up with someone else, gets people in places with prominent folks or people they want to talk
Good, very close.
Okay.
Most likely, most Americans would think it's more like a negative thing, like more of a pimp.
Which is not
exactly the case.
Exactly.
So the word fixa I got introduced to in probably early 80s when I started trying to do some freelance, which was another taboo in the Soviet Union, like translating some gigs, some foreign language video films into Russian language as a Bachelor of English and German. That was my degree and teaching English and German. That was my diploma in 1983 after my internship in Iraq.
Nice.
Was over. So by pure coincidence, a friend of a friend invited me to the first ABC News productions in Moscow since like Soviet Union collapse, 1991. So they basically needed people who spoke good English and could be reliable enough to communicate what Western media producers, actors wanted to have as part of a joint productions between US and the Soviet Union / Russia at that point, transition period. So the first project I was lucky to be a part of by pure coincidence was ABC News. How old are you, by the way?
I'm 30.
You're 30. So probably the names of Sam Donaldson and Diane Sawyer don't mean much to you, right?
No. I know them. I know them 100%.
Good. So that was a big show called Inside the Kremlin. So there was about 100 people from US, ABC News, Primetime Live, and later on Ted Koppel with a separate feature on Inside the Kremlin. So they needed people like myself with certain exposure, with certain skills of English speaking, with understanding more of a bigger picture that, you know, US and Russia are no longer enemies as the Soviet Union was collapsing, more like a welcoming kind of show. To explain to the foreign audience, primarily American, that Russia, with Gorbachev resigning and Yeltsin coming over, was no more a threat. As you remember, it was like always a Cold War until probably that sunny years of Gorbachev for reforms. And I was eager to show and learn how the Western media, primarily TV network, would come produce a show from the Kremlin. So they needed people like Zmir, whom they would call translator, fixer, liaison, whatever, to set up interviews, to get access to some of the locations which were always taboo, like banned from foreign media, like railway stations, some different kind of institutions,
That's awesome.
To get exposure and be introduced to the Western world. So that was my real first adventure.
I wish that's a great job to have. I would love to have a job like that.
Honestly, it was a dream job. And thanks to this job, for the next 10 years, I was kind of perfecting with the feature films like Orlando. Have you heard of the feature film Orlando, by the way?
Yeah, no, I don't. Yes, totally.
It was based on Virginia Woolf's novel, same name, Orlando.
Yep.
Just in brief for your audience who may not have time enough to read that book or seen that film from about 1993 with Tilda Swinton playing both a male and female. This is a metaphysical speculation about someone who was living 250 years, right? Half of the life as a male and another half as a female, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So that was a very interesting gender transformation, which was like another taboo. In the Soviet Union, we didn't know the word sex. We would only say people could make love. Sex was a bad word. It was only associated with the rottening West. Like the prostitutes would sell the services as sex slaves to rich capitalists, right?
Yeah.
In the Soviet Union, it was pitch dark when you could make love to someone. And most likely you would have to marry the girl because otherwise it was not considered as real love. If you just have physical interaction, it was more like a raw sex, which was not part of a Soviet lifestyle, right?
Right.
So to cut a long story short, with all this transformation from a field producer to a series producer to an independent filmmaker, because freelance is no longer a crime by the time Tony decided to visit Russia and to find that recipe of fish pie called kulibaka from his Russian origin colleague in the culinary school, Dmitry. So that was his main goal, to come over to St. Petersburg the first time ever at the show, which was called Cook's Tour, filmed for a Food Network in 2001. And a friend of a friend, you know, there was no internet at that time. So there was no way to expose yourself with social media. It was more like word of mouth. So someone who already worked with the colleagues from US, who knew me as a reliable field producer, fixer, translator, they reached out to me by saying, well, there is a young chef coming, not very famous, just a book of Kitchen Confidential made him a star, but he wants to try his new talents as a TV host. I said, okay, why not? And I loved St. Petersburg, still do. It's one of the most beautiful cities in the world, my second favorite in Russia. So that's how we met. He brought his cameraman, Chris Collins, who became his partner at 0.0 eventually. And I brought my cameraman from Moscow, Igor. Tony had his first wife, Nancy, with him. And the budget was very low. Believe me or not, we had to rent two different apartments, one for them, one for the Russian crew. And that's how our relationship started.
Wow. That is so interesting and so cool. And what a cool job to be doing, and to just, you know, happen to come across and come into contact with Anthony Bourdain. And it's so fun. He, you know, and he's not
exactly
a
so you enjoy what you do, and plus they pay you. Yeah. So funny. You see, he looked like a real hippie, you know, with that ring in his ear and the ring on his finger.
Yeah, well,
in a very long, long kind of coat, not really meant for a severe Russian winter. So we had to buy him a real fur coat, more like a fur hat on next morning in the freezing cold. And actually, on the first night when we had the first production meeting, we never met before, right? So we just basically introduced each other thanks to this common network. And he said, Zamir, at the end of the day, after the first bottle of vodka, not Zamir vodka at that time, just I think could be a Russian standard. He said, Zamir, honestly, you know, I'm like ex-addict. I'm like ex-alcoholic. I'm a little bit insecure on camera. It's one of my first experiences in this new capacity of being a host for a possible TV show. So would you mind being my co-host? Because it seems like you can break the ice. You like to meet new people. You have no problem of explaining the world around you and be very social. And I said, sure. So overnight, basically, from a hired fixer / field producer, I became simultaneously as on talent, on camera talent.
That is so cool. And I got to say, I love that striped black shirt that you wore a bunch. I absolutely love that shirt. I almost thought for a minute, like, are you guys in France? Like, what's going on?
Well, listen, it was a lucky coincidence. I didn't really know that, you know, in France, they also have that striped navy shirt. It was a fancy kind of fashion. It was more of a tribute to my older brother Michael, who used to be a sailor years ago. And actually, he was the first one who sent me that Levi's jeans, which was a dream of a Soviet teenager. It was about 1974. I was about to leave to graduate from school, so it was a very important and very, very rare kind of gift a young teenager would get from someone, because Mikey was enough. Lucky enough to travel as a sailman, like Navy guy, what we call like a skipper rather, on a merchant fleet along the Danube. So, right, it was a reason to be outside of the Soviet Union. So he could trade something like, you know, caviar, champagne into some goods which we would never find in Soviet stores. So it was the first jeans he sent me from his first trip to Austria.
Nice. Wow. That's so cool. Well, I mean, I love that shirt. Do you still have the shirt or is it gone?
I do. I have. I like this. I still keep it on the wear from time to time. So probably you'll see me on June 8th toasting to Tony, by the way. We could have a joint toast with your. How many guys follow you, by the way, if I may ask?
We have at least 30,000 subscribers right now.
That's great. So listen, if you remind me on June 8th at some point when you think it's more reasonable, we'll have another toast with your, you know, followers, my followers, at least Connecticut and those who are the same time zone, East Coast, right? That would
Sounds
be a great. Good reason.
Sounds great. I would love to do a live with you or something like that. That'd be sweet.
Perfect.
That sounds great.
Yeah, just remind me about it.
Yeah, no, I definitely will. I definitely will. You know, what was Anthony like? You spent a lot of time with him, you know, from No Reservations to Parts Unknown. You came over here to America with him. So, you know, a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of us and a lot of folks listening, we really got robbed from ever getting a chance to meet him, if that, you know, chance ever came to us. But you were his friend. So what was it like and what did you learn from him?
I'm sure you have enough patience. So once again, not for the fun of it, that would be a good reason to find the book once, you know, I hope it will be released either, you know, digital or, because that took me about 10 years between the day he said, Zamir, you need to write your own book about your transformational life. And since he took his life off, my book agent said, Zamir, probably this is the best moment you could now embrace what he didn't want you to cover, the way you and him interacted and how he changed your life, which is absolutely correct. So I'll give you a very simple answer, just in anticipation that there'll be about 300 pages about it in the book. Most importantly, he set me free. You know, I was born as a slave in the Soviet Union, right? So meaning that the state dominates your mindset, right? That's another very bad thing about any totalitarian regime. They only want you to follow their point of view. Whether you like it or not, either you are with them or you're an outcast. You will go to a psychiatric clinic or you'll be sent to Gulag in the times of Stalin purges, right? If you remember the 30s and 40s.
Yes.
So that was my mindset. By the time Tony met me, I was kind of getting out of that slavery. It was 10 years after the Soviet Union collapsed. So like Chekhov, very famous Russian playwright, I was trying to squeeze that slavery out of me, which means to be kind of squeezing fear out of your own system, you know? When you are an alcoholic, you try not to touch alcohol, right? But you have the fear of not doing what you want to do, right? There's always a dilemma. Are you strong enough not to do what you want or you are not, right? Are you afraid to do something which is different from what you are told to do since you were born, right? So the way Tony presented himself, he was more like a hippie the first time I met him, right? The guy who was meant to be a rebel, who was always like more like an anarchist to me. He didn't acknowledge that any state, any society has something good for you, right? He was always late on his rent. He never had, you know, real, you know, bank account. In other words, he was working hard, like really hard, like working his ass off for 25 years by the time when we met as a chef, right, in the kitchen, correct? And you definitely, you know, read the Kitchen Confidential to understand all of his stages with drugs, addictions, etc. So from this standpoint, you know, I never read that book by the time we met, right? Because I probably had 10 days notice before we met, actually. It was not available at the time in Russia.
Right.
But the way we started to interact, he told me about his life. I told him about this kind of episodes, you know, from the Soviet past, how I was fascinated by the things which were tabooed in my country and wanted to learn more and more and more about it. So to cut a long story short, I realized that once you really want to achieve something, like his dream was to become a writer. Not that he was really pushing it, but as you know, he had different attempts to write different fiction and nonfiction. And by pure luck, Kitchen Confidential became released and published, and it became a hit, right? So this book switched his life from night to day, rather, right? He didn't have to make a living by working hard at the kitchen. He started to enjoy that popularity and financial freedom because he created it with his own hands. It was not a lottery ticket he got, right? So that was the message I learned, Zamir. If you really believe into something, you can do it. So thanks to his influence, I became an independent filmmaker. About 6 years after we met, 2006-07, I wanted to become a self-producer of my own content, my own documentaries, and shared that idea with him and said, Zamir, with all the experience you had as helping others to make a film, I'm 100% positive you can do it. So I like the idea of a young Chechens and Russians. At that time, it was still a war between Russian Federation, who didn't want to get freedom of accession from this former Russian alliance as Chechen in our republic, because right. they had oil, and definitely Russia didn't want other republics follow them. So right. they were against it, and Yeltsin started the war, which Putin kind of, you know, continued, sadly, as or second Chechen war. So anyway, someone told me a story of young Chechens and young kids from Russia as well, who were teenagers and early 20s, who lost limbs during that battle primarily, and as enemies of on the battlefront, they, to become a real man, like machos, they wanted to play soccer, but without a limb or a leg. I mean, it was very strict rules, the way I learned on amputee soccer play. You really need to have a damaged a foot to be a player in the field, or to have a problematic hand to be a goalkeeper. So these teams, comprised of six players only, were competing in International Amputee Soccer Players World Cup, which I wasn't aware, because it's not that kind of appealing to audience. There is no real audience. It's just families or friends or just independent people who by any coincidence learned about it. So I was fascinated as someone who was dreaming to be a soccer player. I was, good at soccer, European soccer, in my teenaging, and I really wanted to be a professional guy until the doctor said it's not exactly my kind of thing. So I like that story. It was about the people who used to be enemies, like ethnic Muslims and Russian Christians, and how the young kids who wanted to be human beings to upkeep their masculinity, they started playing in this game, and by pure coincidence, two Chechen players and two Russians were selected to become members of one team, a Russian national team. So I was following with my cameraman this, four characters from two different sides, and how through the finger of fate, they became members of one team, and to overcome their physical disabilities, they had a dream. We wanted to be World Cup champions, and they did.
Wow.
It took me about 3 years to follow them and had that success story in the film, which I could hardly complete it without Tony's support. First, ZPZ, his company, financially helped me to do a rough cut, because I ran out of money as, first an experienced, producer. Yeah. And then eventually I completed it with my own efforts. And now I'm very proud that this film won several international awards, and it was not just the only one we did with my wife, who became my partner, has got the media film company. So Tony really impregnated me in a good sense with that sense of you can do it as long as you believe in your dream.
Yeah, no, Tony was so inspirational, and I'm so glad you touched on, the inspiration that he gives other people. And also congratulations, because that sounds like a really awesome documentary.
Thank you. And by the way, I'll send you the link so that it's for real, that I'm not just dreaming about something, so you can watch it.
No, I think it's real. No, that's great. And I definitely want to watch it. So definitely send me those links. I will 100% watch it. And I'm sure I'm going to enjoy it. It sounds like a very uplifting, inspiring story.
It's dramatic, but it is uplifting at the end of the day. Trust me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And on that note, I know Anthony Bourdain is such an inspiring individual. And we met because we have a mutual friend, Chef Carlos Perez, who has an Anthony Bourdain tattoo, who is so inspired by Anthony Bourdain. And I can't tell you how many chefs I've had on this show now in our 93rd episode that just Anthony Bourdain was the whole being for why they became a chef. They, because he made it cool. He made it like rock star like. And,
exactly.
And chefs are rock stars to me. That's what
they
call
are.
Them.
They
That's
are.
What I call
That's
them.
What I learned from. Meeting Tony, and I know Carlos, he's amazing. Same, yeah. I know that Jamie Munger is another amazing guy from the marketplace in Avon. Yeah. So yeah. That's the kind of, people I was introduced to thanks to Tony's exposure. That's yeah. how these people connected to me, especially once they saw that, signature knife on my right, foreshoulder and forearm. So that became another kind of connecting element. Good that you bring it up. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jeff.
No, exactly. And he and so many people, I can't tell you. I always ask them, what did Anthony Bourdain mean to you? When I have chefs on, and Every single one of them had a great story to tell about how he changed their life and their perspective and their outlook on what they were doing and how much he means to the industry. I can't tell you how many restaurants I go in that my friends own and they have pictures of Anthony. I mean, he's a god. And I have one friend named Matt Stanzak who owns, I think, one of the best pizza places, not only in Connecticut, but that you'll see around in the East Coast, I believe, in my opinion. And he's an absolute pizza god, and it's called Good Old Days Pizza in Newtown, Connecticut. And when I told him I was chatting with you, because he's such a big fan of the show and of course of Anthony, he said, ask Zamir what his fondest memory or best time or trip that they had together was. So I had to ask you that question on behalf of someone who, you know, really, really loved Anthony and who Anthony meant a lot to him.
Oh, there were so many of them. Probably Romania, okay. Believe me or not. It was more of a fun to me than to him, probably, because it was a little bit of my mistake to show him more of what was interesting to me rather than which would be interesting to him. So I was a little bit probably egocentric on that scout. I'm not sure how much you understand how our shows were produced when I was part of both on-camera talent and field producing, like scouting. My mission was to go and scout the country first, right? To, propose like 10, 12 different locations with interesting people so that he and his producer in the U.S. would choose 5, 6 to make a show interesting and different. So in Romania, I was always fascinated by the Vlad Dracula and the whole Halloween kind of thing, which was a mystery to me. For him, it was more touristic rather than, I expected. So for him, he didn't really enjoy that kind of weird-looking American tourist coming to Vlad Dracula Palace in Romania. For me, that was real fun. So I understood at a much later stage that he was kind of more of a playing to help me get more of a fun out of the scene rather than enjoying it. But for me, I really thought that was a real, real exposure, how some stigmas about something which was meant to be a fiction rather than the real thing. No one really could prove that it was a real Dracula place and it was like a tradition to do this kind of Halloween episodes, but that was a real fun for me. He kind of pretended he enjoyed it, but at the later stage when I realized that the Romania episode became more as kind of a little bit of a, I would say, black humor, and the Romanian government put us on blacklist because they said Zamir was a KGB colonel and an alcoholic. So we were not sure why Burden chose him to be his kind of a guide in Romania. So I probably oversold myself to Tony, but that was it.
Awesome. I agree. Romania was an amazing episode. I remember watching it with my pops and definitely one of our favorites. And I kind of thought maybe that's where we were headed. Yeah, that's awesome. I have a few more things to ask you before we wrap up. And once again, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate
you
on the show. This is awesome. I'm learning so much. And, it's really great to hear about all these stories about Anthony now that, he's passed. And a question I have for you is, where were you and what do you remember when you first heard that Anthony had passed?
You bring me back to tears. I was on a train, which I like to take from Buffalo to New York. It takes about 8 hours.
Yeah.
So it was probably 10 minutes after 7 when a friend of mine put me on the train. I was a little bit groggy after the farewell night with my friends there. And I really wanted to disconnect from reality and took a nap, which I really like the trains for. But 5 minutes after he put me on the train, my friend, which is another interesting person, by the way, Leo Abbott, he is identical clone of Anthony Bourdain in his size, in his posture, in his image. So that's another reason why we connected, that we became like brothers with Leo. So he calls me like 10 minutes after he put me on the train, Zamir, what's in the news? I said, what are you talking about? Anthony is dead. I said, no, are you like joking or crazy? Like, I couldn't believe it. He said that just check on the CNN news. So that's how I connected to the, social media and saw that news from France, which I couldn't believe.
Yeah. No, it's really sad. And, obviously he had one of the greatest jobs in the world, but, you know, like a lot of people know, you could have, you know, everything could be great and you don't really know what's going inside someone. So it was awful.
Sadly, and by the way, don't forget that May is the month of mental health month. Yes. So yes. We're all like on the basically urge of that dramatic June 8th anniversary, really need to be aware that sometimes people, no matter how happy and positive they look, sometimes they have their own demons, which they, you know, kind of upkeep. And Tony, by the way, when you asked me about the first impression, he was and still is for me. He's like, I relate to him as being in the presence, more like introvert, right? No matter how open he could be on certain topics about family, you know, his personal struggles and stuff, he would never still keep you into the whole core of the situation. You definitely understand sooner or later that there should be some little of a space of a privacy he always kept for himself, which was something I always respected, by the way. So, you know, it's sad to know what happened, but at the same time, he was always an enigma to me and still is. Someone who would always have something like his own dreams, his own world hidden from the other people. No matter whether he was open or joking or making fun, he always felt that there was something well hidden and it's not something he really wanted to be revealed. So I wasn't that much surprised that Eric Ripper, is probably closest friend of his, was with him in France. And even with him, you know, if you watch that Roadrunner movie, he couldn't explain what it was about, why it happened. So it's still a mystery. So probably we should leave it like that rather than creating some kind of paranormal, you know, things that he was assassinated or he was part of some kind of, you know, bad guys hit list or whatever. So I would rather keep it as his own personal way of saying goodbye to everybody.
No, exactly. I totally agree with everything you said. And it was definitely a sad day. It was definitely a day that, you know, you really, you know, some people that you didn't even know watched his shows or were a fan of his, they came out and they were like, man, he really changed my life. And he definitely made me a foodie and made me appreciate different cultures' food and how to respect different cultures and their food and everything like that. And he definitely changed a lot of things, you know, for me and how I look at things. So it was definitely a difficult day, but, you know, his memory lives on so strong. And, you know, people such as Chef Carlos Perez having those awesome events, you know, donating money to mental health and suicide prevention.
Absolutely. Awesome. And by the way, just between you and me, feel free to relate to Carlos. Since I'm still here on that week of, you know, which is part of Tony's fourth departure anniversary, if you think that we could have a little bit of a, I would say, fundraising for, you know, either for peacekeepers and help Ukrainian people or more of a community feel about the suicide prevention, I'm happy to bring my, you know, new batch of Zamir vodka and Ooh. Make it as a charitable, you know, toast or drinks and a couple of t-shirts to be available for the fundraising. So just check with your friends and guys. I think I'll be available on June 8th and 9th, and probably then I'll be away for the weekend, and then I have to go back to Russia, unfortunately, sadly, which is not something which makes me happy because of that war, which I don't support. But as a peacemaker, you know, I already feel that it should be over sooner than later, and that's my bona fide intention to upkeep peace. So just feel free to share it with your friends and the hospitality world in Connecticut, so maybe we'll all could, you know, meet up and then toast to Tony and then do some fundraising together.
I will 100% reach out to Carlos and reach out Please. To some of my other chef friends and definitely put Good. Them together. I would be honest.
That would be an important thing to remember Tony and everybody.
Awesome. Sounds good to me. Sounds great. I'm all for that. You know, one other thing I want to ask you.
Yes, Jeff.
Now that I'm finally getting to it, and I apologize for taking so long to get to it, is
no, it's good.
The ambitious projects to upkeep Anthony's legacy. I know you were mentioning to me earlier this week a documentary film tentatively titled Zamir Discovers Bourdain's America. And then, of course, like you said before, the memoir that he urged you to write.
Exactly. So, listen, to put it in a nutshell, not to overwhelm your audience, You know, once you meet people like Mahatma Gandhi or Anthony Bourdain, who are the same, you know, high class, high minded individual who are meant to have their life helping other people get out of their dark corners and sort of unite them around the table, people of different cultures, ethnicities, mindset, political opinions, because we're all the same, we're human beings. That's how we need to unite about, you know, cause of peace, which unites normal people against the warmongers who definitely want to create their own, you know, crazy world of totalitarian society, most likely. Yeah, so that documentary was conceived with my local friend in Buffalo, self-freelancing producer and DOP, Stephen Powell. So we are still competing with ourselves how to create the rough cut of the film, which hopefully will be entering the film festivals or networks eventually. But since we're just two sweat equity partners, it's hard to complete it on their own. So most likely we might have a fundraiser. So we'll reach out to you maybe and your audience for some symbolic participation for the final cut. But that's the whole idea of trying to explain to people that we're all human beings, you know. So traveling around the destinations which Tony wanted me to see, but we didn't have enough time to get there together. And by the way, I'm not sure you or your audience know that in 2011, he wanted me to be in the field instead of him, more like creating a new show, tentatively titled Comrades. I'll send you a link to this. It was more of a trailer. His company, ZPZ, produced with me and Neri K, one of his associates in 0.0 production. So the whole idea was to put two of us in the field instead of Tony. He would narrate, he would produce, his company would make it available for Travel Channel. That was the whole point of that. So that was the idea, to show the quintessential American lifestyle destinations through the eyes of aliens like Zamir and Nari. She is an ethnic Korean girl raised in the U.S. So she would be my daughter's age. She's like probably 37 now, but it was 2011. And Travel Channel liked the trailer, but sadly for me, Tony decided to divorce Travel Channel that next year and switch to CNN. So that whole show idea, tentatively called Comrades, still stays at the kind of a back burner. So Stephen and myself basically wanted to reinvent that whole concept of me going into the American, you know, tailgate parties, into the American, you know, small communities of ethnic groups, you know, and see how the things go and why people still understand that Tony and his legacy are very important, because he wanted to unite all of us for the sake of good and common, you know, health, common goals, like peacemaking. So wait till you have it. Hopefully next year, that's another dream which I have. But knowing Tony, you know, every dream has its own time frame. So you need to push the rock forward. That's what I'm doing. And once again, thanks to Tony, that's the dream that, you know, his audience and the social groups I'm part of, with regard to Tony's legacy, will be probably the main target audience to see and enjoy it.
That's awesome. That is so great. Thank you for sharing that. I mean,
thank you, Jeff. I'll send you a couple of links so you have a better sense of what we are talking about.
Thank you. No, thank you so much. I can't wait to check all that out. This has been an incredible discussion. And he did unite us. He united us with food. He united us with his love of food, his passion, his candor, his just, you know, genuineness, his love of, you know, just everything that he did and everything that he was. And he's an absolute icon, and you can't go anywhere without hearing his name being talked about or seeing his face. And he really changed a lot of people's lives and the industry as a whole. And, you know, definitely miss him so much, and appreciate you so much for coming on and being able to give us some insight, because, you know, we don't know like you do, you know. So it's just, thank you so much for that.
Listen, it's very timely that we have about 2 weeks left before that sad anniversary. So try to ring some bells with your community of friends. Say hi to Carlos. And definitely we could do something, at least a happy hour or something, just to give tribute to that person who united so many people. And Connecticut does need that kind of event, all right?
Exactly. So everyone listening, because this episode will come out a week from, you know, we're talking right now. So it's going to come out just like the first Friday of June. So definitely,
perfect.
If you're doing this right now, definitely check out the Sweeten Up Podcast Instagram by this time to see what we got going on as far as paying tribute with our local restaurant Perfect. And chef friends. And Zamir, I got two more really quick questions for
yes.
you to end the show here. One of these questions was actually from my editor and writer here on the podcast. He had a really great question for you, which is, what is your ideal meal? Where are you? And what are you drinking?
Well, at this very moment.
Any moment.
Any moment. Well, of course, ideal drink would be vodka because it's like mother's milk. I was raised with it. I still enjoy it. It's a straightforward drink. And your system needs to understand how much you can accommodate. So I can't recommend that for everyone. It's just like personal choice. The ideal meal, of course, will be more of my favorite Georgian cuisine. That was another reason I invited Tony to Georgia in 2015 for the CNN episode. It's more like kebab, the meat kebab, you know, like grilled meat on a stick. To make it more understandable, with lavash, the kind of like tandoori type of bread, which you could dip in the sauce, which could be tkemali, made of plums. And Ooh. That's what Tony actually enjoyed in Georgia more and more.
Oh, that sounds amazing. That sounds so good. And then my second question for you is, you know, here on the podcast, you know, we're located in Connecticut, and here in Connecticut, you know, we're considered to have some of the best pizza in the country, in New Haven, Connecticut, more specifically. So I'm curious to ask you, have you ever been to New Haven, Connecticut? If you have you had the pizza? Where did you go to have pizza? Do you like pizza? I don't even know, you know, because I know pizza is kind of just, you know, it's whatever. It's not the kind of stuff that you and Anthony were eating on your shows, but what are some pizza places that you like, if you had any in this area over here in Connecticut or over in Russia? And just, what are some places, you know, what are some favorite dishes that you like to eat for comfort food when you've had a long day and you're like, I just want to have this?
Well, honestly, pizza, it's like dumplings in Russia. It's something which you could keep in the freezer and just put in immediately in the oven and just get it done within 10 minutes. So with pizza, I definitely started enjoying it during my first trips to New York City, especially when I was on a very low budget, like 1990, when I was probably... Believe me or not, I took the first Greyhound bus just to explore America. And give me a wild shot. How many days did it take me to get from New York Port Authority Terminal to Seattle, Washington Ooh. By Greyhound?
5 days?
Well, 3 days. You're very close. Ah, one
okay,
way.
Okay.
So Kentucky Fried Chicken and pizza were part of my affordable, you know, stopover at different gas stations or at different, I would say, like to take a shower, whatever you call, like small destinations on the way.
Anthony,
so pizza became part of my life. Honestly, in New York, I do love the New York style, like a real Italian with a crispy, thin kind of dough and pepperoni. That would be my number one.
Yes.
But with more sophistication going into like different destinations, Hawaii style with more like exotic kind of combination of everything. So anything which you have in the freezer could be part of your homemade pizza. I'm not much of a chef. My wife is good at creating different, you know, type of pizzas. But honestly, I didn't have a chance to find the best pizza in Connecticut yet. So if you could help me and we could find, you know, a reason to meet there for June 8th with Toasting to Tony, that might be a good way for you and me to finally connect.
Well, I was going to say, have you, I mean, I know of a great pizza place in Newtown, but have you ever been in New Haven, Connecticut?
Honestly, not.
Not? All right. So my question to you is, sometime later on, because I have a place of mind to definitely meet up for Anthony, but sometime down the road, I got to take you to New Haven, Connecticut to have you try some Abitz. That's what we call pizza in New Haven, Connecticut, Abitz. And we got to have you over there to try some New Haven pizza. It's the best
okay.
in the country. So I got to have you try it as an international man of mystery and a man
okay.
who knows his food. So sometime
Jeff, I'm open to different ideas. So let's keep it in mind. And that cool. the second week of June would be the best for it. Like after June 7th, after your, you know, this episode is on, maybe that would be cool. a good follow up for us to meet and say, you know, hello to new friends and toast to Tony's.
Sure. That sounds
Think
great.
About it.
That sounds great. I'm in. I'm going to be in touch very soon in the next
Thank
couple
you,
days
Jeff.
To talk to you about it. Ladies and gentlemen, Zamir Gatta on the Sweeten Up podcast, talking about the late, great icon, Anthony Bourdain, and of course, all the great things that Zamir has going on. And Zamir, thank you so much for joining the show. This is the honor of a lifetime. I was so nervous and jittery because I've watched you and I'm a big fan of your work. So getting to chat with you is absolutely incredible. And before you leave us, definitely let the folks know where they can follow you on social media and, you know, everything like that.
Yeah, it's very simple. Zamir Gatta. It could be, you know, in anywhere like, you know, Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. Like one word, Zamir, which is translated as, you know, I am for peace. And Gatta, like Gatta be free, Gatta drink, Gatta travel. That's another my biggest project, but we'll have definitely more time to meet each other about the way to travel overseas and see the country. The way Tony, you know, showed us the world that, you know, we're all members of the same big community of peacemakers, right? That's how I look at it. So the boundaries no longer exist. For me, I'm a man of the world. I really want people to break that, you know, artificial boundaries and travel as much as Tony wanted to. And that's the way to look at ourselves through the eyes of others. That's how we learn more about ourselves. So definitely to toasting to peace, to travel, and to Tony. That's what unites all of us, and to good food, of course.
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely love it. No truer or better words have ever been said on this show. Thank you so much, Zamir Gatta, for joining the Sweeten Up podcast. I appreciate it. I appreciate you. And you know what? I'll see you in a couple of weeks to toast Anthony.
Thank you, Josh. Really need to meet up.
I've got a great place. Yeah. I will see you soon. Thank you so much. And have a great night, buddy. Thank you. Huge thanks once again to my guest on the podcast today, the man, the myth, the legend, and international man of mystery, Mr. Zamir Gatta. Thank you so much, Zamir, for taking some time to join the show. What an awesome conversation getting insight into you and Anthony's friendship and so much more. And I wish you all the best on everything you have going on, my friend, onward and upward. Yet again, another episode of Sweeten Up is in the books. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. We would greatly appreciate your feedback and support. Thank you as always to my best friends, the guys who make it all possible, post-production and music Morgan Lutzi, production and art director Kurt Vinci, editor and writer Nick Passacretta, and a special thanks as always to Devin Cipelli. I hope everyone has enjoyed the first 3 episodes of Season 3 of Sweeten Up Podcast. We have many more guests to come, recording some more episodes the next couple weeks, and we will be back next week, as usual, with a brand new episode of the show. You never know who will join Sweeten Up Podcast next. But until then, you know the deal. Stay safe, stay healthy, love you all, peace.